Chapter 14, Terror Amongst the Young. Steve, Maria, and their drummer Ben were discussing things in general when Ben mentioned that he had a lot of Jewish people in his family. His wealthy Jewish great-grandfather had left the North and gone to the South after the Civil War to make his fortune. Was he a carpetbagger? Steve asked. I've heard that a lot of Northerners went South and swindled a lot of people down there during the Reconstruction. It was purely business, Ben grumbled. The Jewish have always been merchants of great integrity. For years our family has been trying to regain our wealth, but something has always interfered. I want to become a Jewish Christian now. Maybe that will bring us good luck. Ben told Steve that he had become a member of a Christian cult that denounced the young people as relatives of corrupt tribes, mainly the tribe of Reuben, because he'd sold his inheritance for a piece of cheese. This struck Steve as odd and ignorant. I think young people have a lot to say, and I didn't mean to insult Jewish culture. Maria wouldn't have a bread business if it wasn't for the bagels, Steve pointed out. Referring to a time in his checkered past when he had snitched on somebody to help him gain favor in court, Ben said, "Remember that young kid who only had a stepfather from Lebanon? He'd sold me narcotics and I turned him in when I was in the county jail. I was told my sentence might be reduced if I turned in a dealer. Well, I nailed that Ishmael." Steve, Maria explained, Ishmael was the firstborn of Abraham. The Muslims adopted him as one of their own because he had supposedly been abandoned by Abraham. Lebanon is largely Muslim. Wasn't that young dealer's real family from Jordan where Ishmael lived in Bible times? Just because he was a lost kid like Ishmael, you shouldn't indict him completely. He didn't even have any parents anymore. Yeah, he was from Jordan, but what do I care? In our cult, the Lord says we have to hit the child of the new generation with an iron hand like Cortez did to the pagan Indians. It was called the Inquisition, but they were just teaching them the Word of God, Ben said, his eyes possessed a fanatic's gleam. Steve vaguely grasped the extreme implications of the conversation, and he wasn't interested in exploring them. Steering them back to safer common ground, he said, I guess anybody has a right to his own beliefs. I think music is written for the young. Let's start practicing now. Ben's face brightened with excitement. I wrote a new song that I want us to play. It's sort of heavy metal, though, and I know we usually don't play that kind of thing, but I put together some guitar chords and guidelines. I bet it'll sell good. He extended a sheet of paper towards Steve. Have a look. Hammering Vengeance. Let me start out with a slam. Uncle Sam doesn't give a damn, nor does he know my jam from Adam. And why does this hippie-go-lucky spoil-sport flower child come across like an undefiled sad man on the lam? Doesn't this child of Beelzebub grow bigger than a cub and fiddle with drugs like Nero fiddled in Rome? Don't you get the rub? In Egypt, didn't the young in the guise of Reuben trade their inheritance for a piece of the cheese just like the young drug dealers sell out to the mafia in Nice? They're killing their own revolution by degrading the poor, with the help of the teeny bopper who's lost his moors. The little American monsters are premonitions of society's fears, thrown into proportion by bent circus mirrors. His little revolutionary, the seditious daughter, he spawned only to slaughter. Throngs of America's adolescent druggy dragoons wear masks of indulgence that cover up their real faces, that look like rabid raccoons. They all got their ideas from Looney Tunes. I want to surrender to these children of pillage in an orgy of senses and rape their silvery moon, so the children will sacrifice to the idol in me burning incenses while they pull down for free the fences. This will happen quickly and none too soon. Little kids, don't mow the lawn, just get high on doses, get morose and mow down the roses. Forget about Moses. The meek and mild are going to have to get bent, hammer and nail. I have to execute the lost child Ishmael rather than putting him in jail because he almost put the harpoon in me, the great white whale. Yes, the meek and mild are going to have to get bent, hammer and nail. I abhor the child's every detail. He's such a failure, his bag of goods isn't discount retail. Forget about Abraham and 7 and 4 score, because now it's time for the whore to know the score. The teeny bopper is such a hypocrite and a bore. When he happily haunts down the pig, he is such a chore. His friends act mute with elation and their fantasies soar, because he has killed me, the victim and the boar. The kids think they have no destructive play. They annoy me when they get high on dope and with vanity toy. They appear queer unto themselves with their poker-faced sobriety and oddball ruse. Then they leave town for Nowheresville to avoid the noose. All their little teeny thrills give me a chill. From their petty sins, the world will lose its will. The apocalypse will come and sex a passing thrill. It will take a sleuth to keep them out of the voting booth. Painless Parker has got to yank the spoiled brat's tooth. Get bent, hammer and nail, meek and mild. Heavy metal is abolition for the codependent child. Yes, get bent, hammer and nail, meek and mild. Uncle Tom warns of slavery, no doubt, but robbing the cradle is what slave mongers love, and they would always hope that no one their path would clout, or become angry and hostile when the world prefers doubt. The pillaging teens avoid even paltry guilt, and the poor can't afford sin anymore, because they all live in the house that Jack built. Kids smoke marijuana as if they are sniffing at the pot, but toilet or not, they don't seem to be able to get off that commode or pot. When confronted with an indulgent punter polk like Bathsheba, they just take another toke and call the whole thing a bathtub soak and a joke. Abolition of desires the poet admires, but like the dope, he admires the enslavement of desires. The teeny bopper is always one hair off, but even when he is in the devil's lair, he forgets to scoff. Innocent or violent, hot or cold, kids are just bare-brained without the faintest idea of what it is to be old. Hammer and nail, the meek and mild, gonna have to get bent rather than walk a mile. And because just a sniff of pot is more than a hint, you become a dope, or at least become an anarchist and violent. Yes, hammer and nail, the meek and mild, gonna have to get bent rather than walk a mile. It's not my style about dope to take a hint, even though my error is apparent, and parents and the like warn the young, and of my checkered past they are insistent. Steve read it, then picked out some of the chords. At first, not understanding that the lyrics told about the persecution of the stepchild they were talking about, he gave his naive interpretation of the song. Many times songs are just fantasies, they're not real. This song echoes the burgeoning of the young unfairly with guilt, and it sort of satirizes the poor way young people handle change. I don't really like the song, but I suppose we can play it. He felt the drummer was too good to lose to give more of an opinion than that. He saw the rebellion in the song rather than its negative side. It had a possessive aura to it that he felt would captivate audiences, even though he disagreed with its subject matter. Sometimes Steve's mental disability made him slow to judge. Maria, however, reacted immediately. It is true that young people today like heavy metal, but I don't like the song and normally wouldn't play it. I think the song is so self-defeating, nobody will go for the negative side at all. It'll be just like their parents scolding them, but through their music. I want to soften it with my flute. Maybe that will make the song digestible. It's not a joke, Ben sputtered. I mean every word of it. But I guess if you'll play it, I'm happy. His voice was laced with contempt. Maria thought he was a little bit too much for their tranquil music group. She muttered to Steve under her breath, I just hope we can keep him under wraps. He's really good, but I hope he doesn't take us for his magic carpetbagger ride. In his newly adopted way of speaking with soft enlightenment, Steve said, This heavy metal is the twilight world I left behind when Little Bird woke me up. There is no reason to fall back asleep or live in darkness. We'll give him a chance, but if he demands we play songs like this all the time, we'll have to drop him. They played Ben's song in several concerts, and each time it brought the crowd to a frenzy. They were reviewed in the newspaper as an across-the-board group who played wild heavy metal but received very little mention about their folk rock. A small record company called Ohm Records took them on mainly because of their popularity in San Francisco. They went to a recording session and the promotions man pleaded, Don't you have another heavy metal song? It'll go like hotcakes. Your folk rock is good, but it won't sell like Hammering Vengeance. Maria said, The message in the heavy metal song is garbled and not very appropriate to our own message. I think it sort of stabs itself in the back since it is a song for young people but is actually against young people. I want to put our love song on that single. We don't have a written agreement to produce all heavy metal, and we'll go to another record company if we have to publish all heavy metal here. Maria laughed. Anyway, I prefer waffles to hotcakes. They were allowed to put their love song together with the heavy metal song and cut a CD single, which became popular and climbed to number 10 in the charts. The public had also found out about Ben's attachment to a cult. They got lots of gigs, but Maria in particular didn't like the publicity. I don't know whether I want to play that heavy metal song anymore, she said. I don't like the way there's a mosh pit in front of the stage. It seems we are attracting all these characters high on ecstasy or something. From 10 rows back, they all have this crazed look on their face. The music company will get mad if we don't play more songs like the heavy metal one, but I don't want to. The love song that Steve and I wrote made it to number 16 on the charts, and we made a lot of money that way. I think we should cut one album with Hammering Vengeance on it, but no more heavy metal after that. We'll still make money, though probably a lot less. Steve nodded and turned to Ben. I like to play music I believe in, not music that is controversial and negative. I don't think we can play this song anymore after our first album. John, their lead guitarist, confided that he really didn't like the song either. He thought the way Ben addressed the young people in the song was wrong. Kids are what makes the world go round, and they deserve respect. Angry, the drummer bellowed, "If you don't want me, me and my music can split. In fact, I'll leave right now. I'll get even with you teeny boppers. Satan will take care of you." Then he packed his drums, angrily shoving them in his pickup truck. "We just don't want to play that one song. You're a great drummer. Don't leave," pleaded Steve. In truth, though, Steve really didn't care if Ben left. "You're not a part of my life and religion anyway. All I get is disrespect from you about my life and beliefs. I'm going to form my own group," the drummer fumed. "That's fine. Don't bother showing up at the discotheque gig tonight. We already have your replacement lined up," Steve lied as Ben stormed out the door. Not able to play without a drummer, Steve and Maria soon returned home and canceled the gig at the discotheque. Trying to diminish the drummer's effect on them and trying to rationalize having expelled him from the group, Steve said, "Ben was burdening us and our fans with his beliefs, planting his destructive seed within us. He exaggerated young people's errors in his music, blaming them for his poorly cultivated lifestyle, as if teeny boppers have corrupted him. He seems to believe that the true fruits of success lie in blind rebellion or anarchy. He thinks just because the lavish fruits of change are rampant and wild in nature, people should be rampant in their behavior, to be wild for the sake of being wild, even if they jeopardize balanced relationships. I am cultivating a completely new intellectual musical culture. He is not harvesting a healthy breed of fans. He's producing deadheads. I don't really know how exaggerated our lifestyle is. It does seem like the youth, us, are out of control, but for Ben to behave like a breast-beating Viking who wants to strike down impish youth is freaky," Maria agreed. When they awoke the next day, Steve found he had lost his voice, which he thought was an interesting coincidence after having just lost their drummer. When they turned on the television, they saw that the discotheque they were meant to play the night before had been blown up by terrorists. Numerous hate groups were being investigated to determine if any of them could be implicated. "We could have been blown up. I wonder if somebody wanted to kill us," speculated Maria. "I know it's silly, but you know Ben said we would regret not playing his song, and he's a member of a group that hates young people," Steve said. "Maybe we should tell the police about him." "I think we should. He hates young people, he hates us, and that's two things we like." Maria shook her head with contempt. They called the FBI and explained their connection to Ben and Ben's connection with his cult. Steve stressed that they weren't altogether sure about anything, but that he wouldn't put it past the drummer to do something so dastardly. Steve pleaded with the FBI to show forbearance and not to misinterpret the information Steve had given them. "Don't tell them we told you anything, and please don't assume we have any proof of wrongdoing. We would just like you to investigate to make sure. Follow him around and see what is on his computer or anything he is hiding. We probably won't make an immediate arrest. We would like you to come in so we can talk to you and get all the information you have about him and that cult he's with. Don't tell anybody you've spoken with us." The officer leaned closer into the phone and spoke in a low voice. "You might as well know that if your information leads to arrest and prosecution, there will be a reward for you." Steve couldn't suppress a smile of pride. "Thank you very much. We'll be down there as soon as possible." He tried to appear calm and unaffected, but he was plainly overwhelmed. When Steve spoke to Maria, she said, "If this is all true and we do get a reward, let's start an anti-cult, anti-terrorist, pro-youth website. We can sell special coffee mugs and bumper stickers and things. We'll start an internet movement with the money. It would be enlightening and lots of fun. We could call it Awakened from the Twilight or something, like what happened to you." Soon, Steve and Maria's suspicions that the drummer was a megalomaniac proved true. The FBI raided not only Ben's house, but the cult's house and temple, too. There they found explosives and information about planned bombings. Ben and many other cult members were arrested. Steve and Maria had felt responsible for the deaths of 20 people who had died at the ballroom, because the bomb had been intended for them. Now that the culprits had been arrested, they felt vast relief. As promised, they received a $100,000 reward. With the money, they hired a friend of theirs to collaborate on a website that would focus on an anti-terrorism youth movement. It wouldn't be a site about war against terrorism, but one educating people to respond more quickly to hints of terrorism and to report potential terrorists more quickly before war became an option. Steve and Maria continued to make a lot of money from their music and their bagel business, and they found a new drummer, this one a very pleasant man from Scotland. They also found pleasure in donating money to special causes and gave a lot of money to the Quakers. Though terrible things had happened to him, Steve felt that he had come as close to enlightenment as a regular person could. Steve wanted to tell his story so others could know what he had so gracefully experienced.